Aloha and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. As we say each week, this conversation can include you. Our phone lines are open and your phone calls are welcome. 941-3689 is the number. If you call us from Oahu, use that number, 941-3689. And from the neighbor islands, or if you're listening to the live stream, you can reach us at 877-941-3689. Now, you know what they say about death and taxes, that they are unavoidable. Well, death is another conversation, but today we're going to look at the proposed changes in tax policy to cover the state's programs, operations, and its debt. Taxation in our state always elicits strong reactions from residents and lawmakers, but what makes sense now with downward revisions in revenue and, in likely a few years, a negative change in the economy? How do we plan to meet the state's needs with fairness to the ones who will foot the bill? And with Hawaii's cost of living and many families and low-income individuals living paycheck to paycheck, how can we have policies restructured to provide fairness to all? That's what we'll talk about today on Town Square, debt and taxes. Here's the panel around the table. Nicole Wu is a senior policy analyst at the Hawaii Appleseed Center for Law and Economic Justice. She brings two decades of policy research and advocacy from Washington, D.C., New York City, and India, where she focused on the causes of and solutions to different aspects of income inequality. Prior to moving to Honolulu, she was the director of domestic policy at the D.C.-based Center for Economic and Policy Research. Randy Moore is also here. He's a retired business executive, middle school teacher, and Department of Education administrator. He was born and raised in Honolulu and currently the board chair and director of the Hawaii Housing Development Corporation and a director of Grove Farm Company and vice chair of the Board of Regents, University of Hawaii. Last month, his op-ed on tax fairness was published in the Honolulu Star-Advertiser. And to round out our panel, Tom Yamachika is here. He is the president of Tax Foundation of Hawaii, an educational organization dedicated to informing people like you and me about the finances of the state and local government in Hawaii, including offering commentary on introduced legislation, and there will be some of that today, too. Again, you're here, and if you want to join us by phone, the lines are open at 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Welcome to all of you, and thank you for making time to be here.
Good morning.
As we talk about fairness, when people talk about paying their fair share, all of that seems to be really loaded, depending upon how you want to regard that word fairness. I'd like to go right around the table and just get some sense from each of you how you regard that word fairness as applied to taxes. And I'll start with you, Randy.
All right. Thank you. I would define fairness as progressive, meaning the more income you make, the higher the percentage of your income that you pay in taxes. So the less you make, the lower the percentage you make. That, to me, is fair.
Nicole?
Oh, I certainly agree. And we know that in Hawaii, our low-income workers are paying the second highest tax burden in state and local taxes. So it seems like there is a little bit more fairness that we can achieve here.
Tom Yamachika.
Yes, there's some aspects of fairness that I think go beyond just regular income tax. I know when we, for example, talk about property tax or vehicle weight tax, there's an element that you're paying for goods and services that the government may provide, or like, for example, if you're talking about an automobile, you talk about fairness being, if you use the road more, maybe you should pay more, or if your vehicle is heavier, maybe you should pay more. So there's, I think, a lot of aspects of fairness in addition to what our previous speakers have talked about.
All right. Well, we're going to try to flesh that out a little bit this hour, and we'd like to hear what you think tax fairness is all about. Our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. What does it mean to have fairness in taxes with the state's burden and with that placed on those who have to foot the bill? 941-3689. when we looked at this session, there were a number of bills that came into it that were looking at taxation, various levels. But I want to talk to you about one that went down by the end of last month. Tom Yamachika, you were really very in favor of HB 1586 that would have done away or phased out the TAT and then shifted how the taxation would be made in the counties to real property. That seemed to rub a lot of people the wrong way.
Well, it depends on where you were. HB 1586 was a bill that at least took a comprehensive approach to solving the property the tax fairness issue. What it dealt with was a number of different taxes and tried to kind of, like I said, come up with something more comprehensive. There was a small increase in the net income tax, you know, which is the tax that we pay, typically on April 15th. The state deadline is a little bit different, but we normally think about it as an April 15th tax. And there were some different aspects that would basically shut off the flow of money to the counties and get them to rely on property tax more on the theory that, counties normally tax real property. Real property is impossible to hide. So where you have some risk of evasion or bad actors with other types of taxes, like, you know, people who don't declare their income or people who try to kind of fly under the radar, it's tough to do with real property. So we weren't really in favor of it, but we were just kind of exploring that as an integrated approach. Some other legislators came up with it, but it was kind of remarkable in that it dealt with a number of different tax types. So it was more than what the normal tax bill does.
Ironically, as that was deferred on February 28th and never made crossover, another bill, the one that's being pushed by HSTA, which would have real investment property be subject to a surcharge. It was if that were to pass, that's still moving, and there's no real discussion about what that surcharge might be. But the idea that for educational purposes, that could be something that people seem to be able to swallow. What do you think the difference is with that?
Well, there's actually a couple of different aspects going on. With the bill that the HSTA is pushing, there are two aspects. There are two different bills, and they do very different things, and there's some good reasons behind it. One of them basically is a constitutional amendment that gives power back to the legislature to impose the surcharge on real property tax. You know, as you may remember, in 1978, the Constitutional Convention decided that they wanted to give all of the property tax ability to the counties exclusively, and the voters approved that. So right now, if it's real property, it's the county's kuleana, and nobody else can touch it. So the HST has kind of come out and said, well, that's too low, and we need to get revenue from somewhere. The state government is kind of tapped out, so can we go to the property tax, which is kind of low? And that's what they're going after now. So one thing they have to do is they have to get the Constitution amended, okay? Because right now, their proposed surcharge is unconstitutional. So, but if they get the Constitution amended, then really the genie's out of the bottle, because there is a companion bill to the constitutional amendment saying, okay, we are going to attack residential properties that are valued at $2 million plus, right, and put this humongous surcharge on it. But there is really no guarantee that it's going to stay that way, because once the power is given to the legislature, they can amend that law.
They're also talking about investment properties, not just necessarily residential properties, second homes or whatnot, but investment properties. Wouldn't that cover, for example, a condo building?
A condo building, it might, but the residential investment properties are defined within the within the rubric that they're trying to advance as residential properties, right? You have to be residential properties that do not qualify for a home exemption. And so it's kind of like what we have now in the city of Kauai, Honolulu, with residential A classification. That's what they're targeting, and they're also targeting transient accommodations. But that's kind of another part of the bill.
As you listen to some of this regarding how we might, you know, what we're willing to maybe look at and what we're not willing to look at, does that fit into your ideas of fairness, Nicole?
Well, certainly we know that the property tax in Hawaii is one of the lowest rates in the nation. And in other states, the Board of Education, the schools are generally funded by the property tax. So I think it makes sense for HSTA to be looking at this source, because it's a source of revenue that isn't paying the amount that it would pay. You know, the property tax is not kind of carrying its weight in the way it does in other states. And we've been looking, Randy, actually, you know, in his op-ed in the Star Advertiser, and a coalition called the Hawaii Tax Fairness Coalition, which my group, Hawaii Appleseed, is part of, we've been looking at ways to make the tax burden on our workers more fair. Low-income workers here, as I said earlier, face the second highest tax burden in state and local taxes in the nation, and that's caused mainly by our GET, our general excise tax, which, you know, although it says, you know, the headline number is 4.5% or 4.25%, it's actually much more than that, because unlike other sales taxes in other states, our tax is on every point in that a product makes to get to us. So it's a heavy burden. People in the lowest fifth of the wage earner spectrum, they pay about 11% of their income in the GET, while the top 1% pays only about 1.2%. So low-income people are getting hit 10 times as hard with the GET as the highest income people here. So one way the government can sort of get that GET back to low-income workers and working-class families is through tax credits. They can give them tax refunds every year and help them sort of avoid evictions, pay their bills, pay down debts. So that's what the Hawaii Tax Fairness Coalition is looking at. We've got some bills that would achieve that.
We'll talk about some of those bills. I want to talk to you, Randy, because you put out the op-ed last month. You brought up some of these points. But as you look at how, you know, how this operates, how we begin to look at fairness for some, regression in some ways for other, because we've been living with the GET all of this time, how do you begin to undo this and create a well-integrated, structured policy that begins to create fairness, particularly at the lower end? What do you think we have to do first?
Let me start by agreeing with something Tom said at the beginning, which is that you need to look at taxes in the entirety, not simply income tax, not simply general excise tax. So it's income tax, property tax, vehicle taxes, some of which are appropriately probably borne more heavily by those who use the whatever that's being taxed more heavily, like roads and fuel.
Excuse me.
What can we do? I think Phil Ching and Crystal Rose and I, when we wrote the op-ed, said that certainly one place to start is to institute at the Hawaii level the federal equivalent, or the Hawaii equivalent of the federal earned income tax credit. About 100,000 families in Hawaii file for and receive that federal credit. A bunch of other states have it. We don't have it. That would be one step in making the tax structure more fair, again, looking taxes at their entirety. And the question always comes, well, where do you get the money to do that? If you're going to give low-income people a credit, where does the money come from? It doesn't come from the heavens. And our suggestion was that the additional high brackets that were enacted by the state in 2008 recession expired last year, so I'm doing my taxes now, and lo and behold, oh, my tax bill went way down because the top tax brackets disappeared. Well, if they were reinstated, they would put the upper income people no worse off than they were last year and the year before that, but they would provide revenues, tax revenues, for the state to give earned income credits to lower income families.
You have talked to Tom Yamachika about the idea of why are we even asking low income families and individuals to have to file, because it's so expensive to have to process all of those filings. What would be a ceiling where it would make sense to not file?
Well, just to kind of expand on that point, we had said, a number of times before that our state income tax brackets, as they currently are, they date from the 1960s and they need adjustment. We start taxing people at $3,000 of income, which is insane. You get somebody at the federal poverty line, and they're already in the fourth bracket. Not the lowest, not the second lowest, not the third lowest, but the fourth bracket. And we think that it may be a good idea to just lop off the lower brackets, because number one, they're really compressed anyway, and number two, why are we trying to force people of such limited means to even file tax returns in the first place? I mean, it's really not worth the bother and effort processing the return, which is kind of one of the most expensive documents that the government can ever process. But for what? I mean, what kind of tax revenue can we squeeze out of somebody at the lower end of the spectrum? Is it going to be worth even the processing cost? And that's one thing that we were trying to bring up. That's again one reason why we were looking at credits and we were thinking, well, maybe that's not the way to go, because number one, to get a credit means you got to file a return. Number two, if you are and the way our system works in Hawaii is if you are owed a credit but you don't claim it, you lose it. Which means, for a lot of people at that end of the spectrum, they really don't know a whole lot about filing tax returns. They don't do it, and then they create a situation where, okay, they're eligible for the credit, they don't take it, they are trapped by our very, very low tax bracket, so they actually owe tax, and so we're going to now go after them. I mean, it doesn't seem, a justifiable use of state resources to do that.
You're also talking about the idea, though, or implicit in that, is having money in your pocket today versus getting a credit tomorrow.
Yes, that's...
Because all that bespeaks action to be able to, A, know that you have the credit, and then you have to file, then you have to make sure that you got the credit. And so, yes, you may be getting it back, but at those very low levels, does that really make sense to be having people file an income tax return when they are making so little and end up actually costing us to have to process that? And maybe they'll get their credit, maybe they won't?
Mm-hmm. I think I can speak to that. I certainly agree with Tom that Hawaii does tax people at very low income levels, and that doesn't make sense. And I think we can all agree that we should zero out their state income tax bills, but that doesn't go far enough. I mean, for example, a single mom here in Hawaii working full-time at minimum wage is making $18,500 a year. She would owe about $175 in Hawaii income taxes, but she, over the course of the year, would have paid about $2,000 in the GET. So even if we zero out her income tax, it's not enough to get back the money that she spent on the GET. So these tax credits are refundable tax credits in our Hawaii tax fairness bills. These refundable credits actually give people a tax refund. That's why at the federal level, the EITC that Randy talked about is so important. It gets thousands of dollars back to working families that they plow back into the local economy. If our bills were to pass, for example, the single mom at minimum wage would get... if the working family credit here were set at 20% of the federal EITC, she would get about $650 back from that. If the food credit were, given to her, she'd get another $220. If the renter's credit were given to her, she'd get another $300. And that chips away about maybe half of the amount that she was spending on the GET, which we know, as I said earlier, low-income people are getting hit 10 times as hard by the GET.
But how is she getting that back? Is that mother getting back that money in her paycheck?
No, it's through a tax refund. And so,
so she still have to wait the whole year.
She does have to wait the whole year. And, you know, in many ways, this helps families avoid evictions. We know when the Aloha United Way had their pilot project last year, they helped 1,400 families avoid eviction with grants of about $1,000. And so we're talking about that sort of help where families can avoid an eviction or pay down some debt. And, you know, it would be great if families didn't have to pay the GET every day of the year, but we're locked into that. That's one of our main revenue sources. How else can the government get the earn that money that people are paying out for the GET? This is working families, the working family credit. You have to be working to get the credit. How do we help them keep more of their hard-earned money?
Well, that's the essential question, and one of the reasons that we talk about the idea of fairness, because that seems to be squarely where it sits. We're going to take a call now. If you'd like to join us, 941-3689 is our number, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Frank calling us from Kaneohe. Aloha, Frank. Welcome to Town Square. Frank, you there? Okay. I guess we don't have Frank. Maybe we have you. How do you feel about tax fairness in Hawaii? Whatever your income bracket is, how do you feel about how we tax in general? Obviously, people are more sensitized to what their own tax bills are, but as you look out into Hawaii and clearly know what issues we have with those who are at the very lowest end of the tax bracket, those who are at the very lowest end of the income bracket, what does it mean to create a fair tax system? Should we be taxing people who are making a certain amount of money if they're making $18,000 a year? Is it something that we should simply just maybe do away with? And I'm just arbitrarily pulling numbers out of the air, but is there a point where it just doesn't make sense to be taxing people? Is there something else that we could be and should be doing to be able to distribute the burden of taxes a little more fairly? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. The idea of getting money back into people's pockets, as Nicola said, as we all know, can't do much about the GET. It's pretty much set, but we know that because everybody buys, everybody's subject to it, so that those people who are making very little are still having that taken out. And she used the example of your mom making minimum wage would be spending about, what, $2,000 in GET over the course of a year. Randy, how do we avoid that? Is there any way to avoid that?
Well, there are states, and it's been suggested here, that we exempt food from the GET. There are two challenges with that. You obviously need to raise the rate on everything else to make up for it. But the other is that as we have increasing numbers of visitors staying in vacation rentals, they show up at the supermarkets, and right now they pay the GET on food. And if we get rid of the GET, we lose the revenue from the visitors as they shift their business from restaurants to cooking at home. So
clearly, obviously, there's no perfect solution in looking at the pros and the cons of all this. But has there been any sort of cost-benefit analysis done with how many visitors who are actually going in and purchasing food to be able to cook in their condos and do that versus what happens with residents who are going in just to buy food for their daily needs? Tom?
Well, I think looking at the problem more generally, there's been some studies that were cited by the Tax Review Commission a number of years ago, and that Mayor Caldwell, at least in our city and county of Honolulu, keeps saying, yeah, they show that visitors pay a third of the GE tax. Okay. We at the foundation, crunched the numbers a little differently and found that the number is between 15% and 20%, but the fact remains that there is a certain percentage of these taxes that we oppose. GET is one of them. Transient accommodations, of course, is another, that are not being paid by, the working families that live here. So that's part of the solution, we think.
In either way that those numbers are crunched, clearly the vast majority of those who pay for this are residents, which seems to be what the point that both of you are making, and that there should be a different situation. The question is, what should that be? We're talking about tax fairness today on Town Square. We want to hear from you, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689.
Well, one of the obvious counterparts to that is, you know, if you want to give money back to a certain class of people, do you have to do it through the tax system? I mean, there are ways that, you know, we have an entire human service department. We have EBT, Electronics Benefits Transfer. We have a number of programs that we use to get these benefits back into the community. And you know, they seem to be more attuned to the needs of individuals, you know, more than tax people anyway. So, you know, why rely on the tax system to give it back to people? Because tax people are more focused on taking people's money rather than giving it back.
And you make the point about, yeah, about the EBT, because that would put dollars right back into somebody's pocket pretty immediately. We're going to take some callers now, going to Lynn from Kailua. Aloha, Lynn. Welcome to Town Square. Okay, we're going to try again. Maybe we're having a problem with our phone. Going to Amy, calling from Honolulu. Aloha, Amy.
Hi.
Hi there.
I would like our guest to discuss the possibility of removing GET from food and or prescription drugs.
Okay, well, we handled food a while ago, but the idea of taking that away from prescription drugs, are you talking about especially for people who are older and who may be on a fixed income?
Right, and it would be basically all people. I mean, you know, not just for certain age categories, but removing GET from those items.
Well, we already exempt prescription drugs and prosthetic devices from the GET. We've been doing that since 1986. The debate kind of resurfaced when they were considering medical marijuana, and they decided to at least make the policy call that medical marijuana wasn't medicine, and so the sales of that product would be subject to the 4% GET like you know, everything else is. So prescription drugs are taken care of already. Over-the-counter medications are not prescription drugs. So if you go to the drugstore and you buy, you know, aspirin or something else over-the-counter, that doesn't qualify for the exemption. But the stuff that you buy with a prescription is exempt. Food is, I think, the 800-pound gorilla in the room, because if you try to exempt that, there is going to be an enormous revenue hole created, and other states have gotten, you know, lots of problems exempting food because they really don't have a clear definition of what food is. You go to the supermarket and you buy vegetables, that's food. You go to McDonald's, is that food? You know, some people would say no. You go to a high-end restaurant, you buy a meal, is that food? And some people would say no. Where do you draw the line?
And maybe it comes down to where you are purchasing that. If you're going in to buy food at a grocery store, that's one thing. But clearly going to a restaurant, however you define restaurant, McDonald's to Chef Mavro, it's a very different scenario than when you have to go home and prep it yourself. Lots of questions to this, not a lot of very clear answers, but we're talking about taxes and tax fairness in Hawaii today. We want to hear what you have to say. Going now to Ivan, calling us from Salt Lake. Aloha, Ivan. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi, thank you for having me on. I'm not a tax expert by any means, but I do recognize there's two issues. We need to pay our teachers more, and we have to find that revenue somewhere. What kind of appalled me is the teachers' union proposal, and I can give you my specific scenario. I'm a struggling middle-class family in Salt Lake. I rent to another struggling middle-class family in Kaneohe, by the way, who's a teacher, and teachers union proposal to raise my taxes by $360 a month, and that would have gone, I would have put that on the teacher out there. So do you understand? You can kind of see the double-edged sword of the proposal. And my question, I guess, is, you know, what's the filter system for these unions, and is there a better way to raise money for teachers besides what I consider targeted taxing or targeting figures of people, locals, that line the pockets of other groups of people, but in my particular case, not so much. That person would suffer.
Interesting scenario. Thanks very much for calling us. Let's talk about that a little bit. He's got a rental property. A teacher is the one who happens to be renting it. And if the measure that we talked a little bit earlier about, the HST measure, the SB 683, were to pass, and they could put on some of these, or a surcharge onto investment real estate property, then it might adversely affect someone who just happens to be a teacher.
Yeah, that's correct, and that's why you need to consider these tax proposals very carefully, because they have a lot of moving parts and oftentimes a number of consequences that that you may or may not have thought about before.
If you think further out into the future, though, yes. So there is the example of people who are renting their homes to other people who are living and working here. But we also hear stories of so many homes that are empty most of the year because people from the mainland and other countries can afford to buy a property and leave it empty and just come here and use it for a month or two when they have vacation.
So that brings up the question that I think Ivan was asking. What kind of filter do you apply to that? Do you just say, well, it's an investment property, well, down and done. Then we have a scenario like you just described. Or is there something else that could be done to refine it where there would be some more subtleties to be able to characterize what could be
and
available
Tom,
for the surcharge?
Tom might know this better than I do, but I have heard that on other islands that there are some property taxes that are based on the use of the property, so whether or not it's being used as a residence. But if you go further out into the future, I know that there would be some pain now, and we can try to put filters on the value of the property, for example. But if we can put these property taxes on these investment properties to de-incentivize, to make it less likely that these mainlanders will keep their houses empty for 10 months of the year, then that should open up more housing, and that should bring prices down, rental prices down, property values down. But we have to find a way. We do have a problem with people from the mainland and other countries buying up properties and leaving them empty for a good part of the year. And, you know, our government only has a certain number of tools, but one of them is taxes. If we can find a way to make it less profitable or less affordable for people to just leave these houses empty, then we should be able to open up more housing stock.
Tom or Randy, do either one of you have any sort of data that would show how many of these houses we might be talking about in terms of a percentage of houses that are purchased by people offshore or who are on the mainland and who come here for only a couple months out of the year? I mean, it doesn't seem to be that maybe it would be as huge of an impact, but at least in the way that we talk about how we tier or potentially might tier taxation.
Yeah, no, I think that's the problem that the city and county of Honolulu was trying to solve when they enacted Residential A. And the solution they came up with, of course, was to hit the properties of $1 million or more that don't have a home exemption. But then you kind of got into the issues of, okay, you have the property that's being rented to somebody else who is a teacher, who is somebody in, you know, low income, and that's Residential A. You have the issue of a homeowner who got too sick to live in the property and move to a rest home or a care home.
Yeah,
that also disqualified them for the home exemption. And before corrective legislation was enacted, I think last year, that was a problem as well.
All right.
So
ahead,
the line drawing is always a
I think Randy wants to jump in here. Go ahead.
Well, then there's a question of how bad really is the out of state investment in second homes.
Well, that's the question. Do we actually have any real data on that?
Well, I had seen something, and this is now very old data, but something like north of 20% of Hawaii County. Our real property tax revenues came from property owned by folks out of state. And
when you say old, can you put sort of a time
like
frame on that?
The high end second homes.
No, but in terms of the age of this data, when did you say this?
I think last year.
5 or 10 years.
Nicole?
Yeah. No, last year there were reports that about 25% of properties in Hawaii were sold to out of state owners. And on Maui, I believe it's up to 50%. But this is really hard to figure out because a lot of out-of-state buyers have corporations that are incorporated here in Hawaii to purchase the property. So it's actually really hard to figure out. But I think just looking around at the buildings that are going up and at the properties nearby, we can tell that a lot of them are being purchased by people who aren't from the state.
But of course, if they're going through legal channels because they have an incorporated business here and the business purchases it, that's a very different story. It doesn't matter if they get to keep it dark or, you know, pack people in as they will. We're going to take a few more of your callers. I'm sorry, Randy, you want to jump in?
So the question, going back to my Hawaii County example, the folks that have those high-end second homes at Mauna Kea Beach Resort and Hualalai, paying more than 20% of the county revenues, don't consume anywhere near 20% of the county expenditures. So they are actually supporting the residents of the county by paying these very significant tax bills. So is that bad?
Well, that's sort of the question.
Yeah.
That's part of the question. And I think we heard from Howard Dykus, who said about a third of the tax bills in Hawaii are going to those outside of the state. So, I mean, everybody's talking about roughly the same neighborhood, 20%, 25%, you know, maybe 30, 33%, somewhere in there, but the vast majority still being here. So the question is, what do we do about some of these issues that we've been reticent to talk about before, even the fight over should we have tiered taxes? What does it mean? Is that fair when somebody says, well, I purchase it, it's my property? Where are you going to draw the line to be able to bring taxes into the state and be able to pay this tax, the state's taxes, and also create fairness for those who are footing the bill? We're going to go back now and take a look at what our callers have to say. Going to Carl, calling us from Honolulu. Aloha, Carl. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi.
And you want to talk about the GET, too?
Sorry?
And you want to talk about the GET as well?
Yeah. So, I've been listening to this, and it's obviously a very complex solution, or complex problem with a difficult solution. But I just wanted to point out, because it's something that the conversation was kind of hinging on, is, you know, we were talking about this number that is somebody who is making minimum wage around $18,000 would be spending $2,000 on the GET, and that's just straight up wrong. The GET is on Oahu is 4.5%, and 4.5% of $18,000 is about $840. You could say that $840 is too much as well. But it's a very different number. It's less than half. And that's also assuming that you're spending all of your income and that all of it is subject to GET. So it could well be lower than that.
Yeah, so the GET is not just a normal sales tax as it is in other states. In other states, the sales tax just taxes your purchase when you're buying it at the retail store. Our GET is a tax that taxes services and products every step of the way. So when it comes off of a ship in our harbor, when it goes from a wholesaler to a retailer, when it's, you know, if there's a manufacturing process here. So I believe it was, I can't remember which group, it might have been Tom's group, said that it's more like an 11% tax here. And the Institute for Taxation and Economic Policy in Washington, D.C., which is, you know, recognized as an expert in the tax systems of the 50 different states, has looked at the tax burdens in great detail. And the bottom 20% of our income earners pay about 11% of their income in GET. For a low-income minimum wage worker, it's hard to believe that they're paying thousands of dollars in GET, but that's how much our prices are raised by adding this tax at
because
every step
of the way. Because they're compounded each time that it changes hands.
And this is part of why our cost of living is so high here and why we have such high prices here.
Tom, you want to respond?
Yeah. One thing that you got to keep in mind is that the GET is not imposed on the consumer like sales taxes are. That's another key difference between sales taxes that you were talking about. They're actually imposed on the business. So it's a privilege of doing business as opposed to the privilege of buying something.
It's not just an end user tax. I mean, it's going from every time something changes hands and goes from one person to a business to another, coming out of the ship, there's GET imposed.
Every time a business gets income.
Okay, we've got lots of callers on the line. We want to get them through and talk to all of you. Alan, calling us from Hawaii Kai, also wants to talk about the GET. And in fact, that point, that business taxes get passed on to consumers in the end. Alan, you there?
I'm here. This is an area that I'm concerned about because I really feel that the GET that you have to pay at retail at the end, that is, as you're saying, a business expense. So is their electricity, so is their labor. And so they make us pay that business expense, but they put it on our bill as a sales tax. And I believe that could be totally a huge lawsuit against all these companies for illegally collecting sales tax because it is not a sales tax. Is there some way to get at that and then open up this whole really can of worms and get rid of some of this that we've been talking about?
Well, let's see if anybody on the panel wants to take that on. Thanks, yeah, Alan, for the call. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, the Office of Consumer Protection has taken that on before, and they're okay with businesses passing on, you know, 4.712 in Honolulu and 4.166 in the Neighbor Islands. They're not okay if they pass on more than that. There were some businesses in Maui that passed on GET at 5%, even though the rate was 4. So yeah, that was a little sketchy. and the OCP had a problem with that. But if what is going to the government is the same as what is being collected from the consumer, they don't have a problem with it.
Okay, we're going to move on, take some more callers. Going now to Leonard, calling us from Kahala. Why not a variable GET, he's asking, for different classes of items, necessities versus luxury items? Leonard, you there?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, welcome to Town Square.
First of all, it just occurred to me some of the problem could be solved by not calling it a GET. It's actually a value-added tax, which is pretty common all throughout the world.
I'm watching a couple people around the table shake heads that the GET is not a VAT. Why?
Well,
I didn't say it's exactly a VAT, but when you either it's value added because there is a tax each and every time. That's not why I called.
Okay, go ahead.
I believe that the tax is very unfair, and if you take the major expenses of the poorer people, which would be food, medical care, the necessities, basic necessities, and eliminated that as a tax, and increased the tax for luxury items. I'm making this up. Cars over $35,000, home repairs, reconstruction, accounting fees, legal fees. Perhaps that could be balanced out and eliminate the tax for the.
Okay, let's see what our panel has to say to be able to answer you. I mean, everyone's going back to the same idea of, well, you know, there are certain things. You're not talking about going to Tiffany's. You're talking about going to your local grocery store to be able to buy bread.
Right.
How do you structure a tax system that taxes one of those things at a certain rate and perhaps doesn't tax the other one at all?
Well, it could get very complicated because we'd have to have legislators sitting in the table, around the table with a list, putting things in one column versus another column, and it could become really complicated. We are one of the 7 states that fully taxes groceries. And it would be great if we didn't have to tax food. But as Randy said, it would cause a huge hole in our revenues because everybody would benefit from no longer having the tax on food. And that would mean millionaires as well would get a tax savings.
Okay.
So if we are locked into the GET, then there are other ways we would have to get the money back to low-income people.
Anybody else want to chime in? Okay, then we're going to move on. Going to John, calling us from Waipahu, wants to know about pensions. Oh, boy, this is a can of worms. Pensions aren't taxed in Hawaii. Pensioners who have a large enough income should pay, according to John, joining us now from Waipahu. Aloha. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. I would like to make the comment that Hawaii does not tax pensions. And this seems to me to be unfair if the pension income is large enough. And as you may recall, Neil Abercrombie sort of took a torpedo during the time of his serving as governor when he proposed that all pension incomes in excess of $37,500 be taxed. And I think that's a pretty good idea.
All right. We got a lot of heads nodding around the table about remembering what happened when the mere suggestion of taxing pensions came out with former Governor Abercrombie, and also the stance of AARP and others that said, you know, that should be hands off. People work long and hard for that, so why shouldn't that be looked at as, you know, retirement funds and not necessarily simply as income for income? Anybody want to comment on that?
Well,
you don't have to. We can certainly move on, but now's your opportunity.
We're talking about former Governor Abercrombie, you know, with emphasis on the word former. That's, I think, one of the issues that led to his not being reelected. And I think legislators are very, very sensitive to that.
Okay.
If I could, somebody once said taxes are the art of the possible. And former Governor Abercrombie did run that up the flagpole. As a pensioner, I frankly thought it was a good idea. I don't know why my pension income should not be taxed while my dividends rents are all taxed. I don't know why the pension shouldn't be taxed, but that was a dead on arrival proposal. So we have to work with what is possible rather than what is ideal.
Because certainly when you take money out of, like, say, when you have to take your distribution at 70.5 from the income that you've been saving through maybe a 401k, that's taxed.
And the federal government taxes my pensions. So I just don't understand it. But as I say, we have to stay with what's possible. One of the challenges also with taxes is that if you try for perfection, we don't want to move from where we are until we can get to perfection. We'll never get better because we'll never get perfection. So we need to take the steps that we can take.
Okay. We're going to give you the phone number again in case you want to get in on this conversation. We know it's a thorny one, but it's one that we keep coming back at because we have issues that just keep coming back at us, as you well know. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. How do you create tax fairness? Going to Michael calling us from the Big Island. Aloha,
yes.
Michael. Welcome to Town Square.
Thank you. I didn't know if you could still hear me.
We can.
I'm a cell phone in Big Island.
We can hear you.
I'm Mike Jones. I live in a Big Island. I'm disabled. I feel that immigrants should come here and that businesses should be taxed. And landlords that charge over $1,000 for houses should be taxed more than the local people that wind up in shelters. I mean, sick of seeing that. You know, it really makes me sick. I was on the main in 3 years. I come back, I can't even afford a loan.
Okay, Michael, I'm going to just stop you right there. The idea that we tax one class of people differently depending upon how long they've been here, all of that seems to go against the grain for a lot of people who say, you know, there are other ways or other filters through which we should be taking this. But as you can hear from some of the callers, everyone has their sensitivities. Different people feel that, you know, that, but there seems to be this idea that somehow, some way, we need to take care of those who cannot take care of their tax burden, or perhaps shouldn't even have one. So as we have about 10 minutes left in the program, I really want to ask you, though, how do we do all of that? How do we create fairness for those people and also expect the state to still fulfill its obligations and the wants and desires of the people in Hawaii who say, well, these programs need to be funded? And all those programs that we talk about with the capital P, they all sound to be really good and important, but the money has to come from somewhere. So, Nicole, how do you balance those two things?
Well, as Randy mentioned in his just now and in his editorial, we had higher tax rates on the wealthiest folks here in Hawaii from 2009 to 2015. And it's been estimated by ITEP in Washington, D.C., that if we put those tax rates back on the most fortunate among us, we could raise about $75 million a year. That would more than pay for the refundable tax credits that I was talking about earlier for our low-income and working-class neighbors. And it's the people who can afford it. And to me, that's the definition of fairness. So,
Tom, what's wrong with that idea?
Well, I think the more you squeeze people, the more they will vote with their feet. We have been looking for the past few years at an out-migration of people, you know, from Hawaii to places like Nevada, California. Oregon, for example, doesn't have a sales tax. Washington doesn't have an income tax. Nevada doesn't have an income tax either. We've seen, you know, statistics showing that we are losing people. And I think the more you squeeze people, the more they're going to vote with their feet. So you may not get the enhanced revenue that you're talking about if you keep squeezing and squeezing and squeezing.
Nicole?
Most of that out-migration seems to be struggling working families, honestly. You know, younger folks who don't think they'll ever be able to buy a house here in Hawaii. And, you know, California and Oregon actually have higher income tax rates at the high end than we do here in Hawaii. So, you know, it doesn't seem to be the wealthy folks who are leaving for high-tax states. It seems to be working people.
Which causes a whole other problem when you talk about the service economy and where is that service economy going to find those to be able to fill those positions.
And Randy's one of the people who was affected by the high tax rates, so I'm not sure if he felt that his peers were complaining about these high tax rates for a few years. Or
were they?
Well, there were three of us that wrote a commentary that said nobody likes to pay taxes, but if we're looking at fairness, we don't object to paying more taxes if the benefit goes to those who have much lower incomes.
And how many of your peers joined you in saying, of course?
Well, actually, there were three of us that wrote it, and nobody came to me and said that was really a stupid article. Everybody who talked to me said, I'm glad you wrote it.
Okay. Being glad that you wrote it was one thing. Being willing to take action and say, let's make sure that we reinstate this, that's another. What do you think the chances are of seeing that happen in future with you gathering steam, especially among your peers?
Well, we visited with some legislators, and their concern over it, which I completely understand, was that when they enacted the higher brackets in 08, it was in response to the recession.
Recession, right.
Serious recession. We need more money to get us through this thing. And it's temporary. It's expired. And if we go back and say, okay, we're not going to reinstate it, who will believe us? Us, the elected officials. And I have considerable sympathy for that perspective, but I would respond to say that we now have a greater income inequality and greater awareness of the long-term adverse effects of that, that it's worth another try at higher tax rates for the higher income folks.
All right, we're going to try to pack in a couple more calls here. We've got lots of people on the line, going to Caroline, calling us from Puna. Aloha. Welcome
Hello.
To Town Square. Hi there.
Hi. My complaint is that medical services are taxed. Dentists give me a tax. I don't understand that.
All right. Well, as I think you were talking a little earlier, Tom, about, and I think both you and Nicole, about services also being taxed, and that's why it's not just a sales tax. For goods, it's also applied to what services you get, including for health care.
Right. I mean, one of the reasons why our tax rate, our GET tax rate, is 4% or 4.5% as opposed to 8 or 9%, which is what it is on the mainland, is that we have a very large base. And if you are thinking of shrinking the base, like exempting food or exempting services, then you are going to need a much larger rate to make up the revenue that the state government already gets. If you're going to create a revenue hole, then you got to make up for it somewhere. And the question is, how is that going to happen?
Which seems to go back to the idea of if you have expectations that the state is going to be providing certain programs and services and that has to be funded somehow, are you willing to give up some of those programs or services to have perhaps less of a tax burden on everything, including goods and services?
Mm-hmm. Well, we know we have a crisis here in Hawaii in terms of high living costs. We have a houselessness crisis. And a lot of these families are teetering at the edge of poverty. And, you know, doing things like what Randy says, that he's willing to pay his fair share, and giving that money to low-income and working-class families really can help avoid evictions, can help families meet their bills, can stabilize families, and help their children perform better in school. You know, I don't know if we have time for this, but in my work with this coalition, which has groups like the Sierra Club, the Hawaii Children's Action Network, the Hawaii Alliance for Progressive Action in it, I spoke with a woman named Heather Kimball on the Big Island who owns an architectural firm. She and her husband employ 8 people. And she said that if it were not for the federal EITC, she would have had to drop out of college. I've also talked to an undergraduate here at the University of Manoa who is working at the Waikiki Aquarium and trying to make ends meet. And she was saying how these sorts of tax credits, a tax refund, would be able to help her finish school on time and finish college. And so, you know, there are more effects of these tax bills than just how much you're paying and how much people are getting back. But there are long-term effects of stabilizing families.
But that's all part of the same picture of what do we expect from government? What are we willing to trade off to be able to give those tax credits for those individuals who need them for whatever reason? It's what makes it so incredibly thorny and difficult for us to be able to talk about. So as you look at this, I mean, Randy, you were born and raised here. You've seen a lot of shifts over time. Is there any way of being able to create a slightly better balance than what we have now that doesn't disadvantage the people that we've been talking about, that you've written about?
Well, I wrote specifically about restoring the higher brackets on the higher income folks,
right,
and giving credits. So that's something very specific that is no net cost to the government.
Right. And we have bills going through the legislature who made it through crossover that would do exactly what Randy's editorial recommends, which is raising taxes on those who can afford it and spending that money on working class and low-income families. One of the bills has a hearing next Wednesday in front of the Ways and Means Committee, and we, you know, the coalition that I'm working with is hoping to push these bills all the way through to the end.
Yeah. You raise a different question, which is, so how can we reduce the overall cost of the...
Or should we?
Should we or could we? Different question from how should we distribute the current tax burden?
Well, right. And then that's the next layer of all this, because if you know that all of this is going to be changing over time, right now we're looking at the situation as we see it. We know that we're going to have less revenue in future. We know that at some point we're going to hit recessionary times again, and that's probably not too long in coming because we've had an 8-year recovery. How do we begin to look and plan for that and understand that we may see a much worse situation if we don't?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that we do have to think about is dealing with the cost of state government. We have these other post-employment benefits, or OPEB, that is really an 800-pound gorilla. Problems that or unfunded balances that were lower than ours, we're able to sink whole cities. So we've got to get this under control, and that's just one of the aspects of, you know, the cost structure in our state government as it exists today. You know, we do have to look at not only, you know, who are we going to squeeze for revenue, but how can we spend the money that is raised more wisely?
And those are lots of questions that we're going to have to take up in a different town square, because we have just run out of the hour. We're going to see what happens next Wednesday as that bill is looked at to see if, in fact, we see credits coming through, low-income tax credits, or not. And we'll have to have another run at this as we move through the rest of the session. And heaven knows we've been talking about this for many, many years, and no doubt we'll be talking about it for many, many more. Nicole Wu, thank you for being here. Randy Moore, Tom Miamachika, and you too with your phone call. Sorry for those we couldn't get to. We will be back with you next week taking a look at what's the healthcare future look like for Hawaii. We'll talk about it right here next Thursday morning at 11, and we'll be repeating the discussion at 7. We'll talk to you then. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Aloha.